I am speaking to you at a moment of grave crisis.
I'm Jeff Turner, and this is Recall. It's a series about history. Not the ancient past, but history that's still hot to the touch. In this first season, I explore a revolutionary political movement that brought a modern democracy to the brink. You can find Recall, How to Start a Revolution, on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Q. Ani DiFranco has done a lot over the 3.5 decades she's been making art. She's a Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter, incredibly influential. You got folks like Indigo Girls and Tegan and Sarah saying, you know, they wouldn't exist without Ani DiFranco. And on a business level, it's really interesting because she started her record label Righteous Babe Records back in 1990. That was way before most artists had their own record labels. It feels like all of them do now. But Prince, Bon Iver have both said that Ani DiFranco was really influential in how they like managed their business. And of course, she's a social activist. Over the years, raising her voice for reproductive rights and gun control and voting rights and the climate. I mean, the list goes on and on. And I would think that Ani DiFranco she'd be afforded the luxury of lying on a beach with a margarita in her hand, or at least like doing one of those things over and over and again, label or songwriter or activism or something like that. And now she's taken a whole new direction. Let me explain. 15 years ago, the musician and playwright Anais Mitchell came to Ani DiFranco with this idea. She wanted to make a musical about the Greek myth of Orpheus and Eurydice, and it's called A Hades Town. That was the idea of it. Ani listened to this really rough tape, ended up releasing Hades Town on her label. Fast forward to 2019, Hades Town is a smash hit on Broadway, like sweeps the Tonys, including Best Musical. And now Ani DiFranco is a Broadway star. She's joined the cast. She's made her Broadway debut as Persephone. So Ani joined me from New York to talk about what she heard on that rough tape that made it to Broadway, how getting the Broadway role felt like the fulfillment of something she didn't do as a kid. And as someone who's been singing about reproductive rights her entire career, how does she process the overturning of Roe v. Wade? Here's my conversation with Ani DiFranco. So 15 years ago, your label releases Hades Town, and you sang the part of Persephone, but now you're playing her on Broadway. What made you want to say yes to this?
Yeah, I never imagined that this would come back around, this project, in such a big way. But when I got the call a little while ago, it was too bizarre and terrifying to say no to. Amen. I mean, at this point in my life, I've played so many Ani shows. I've made so many records. I've written so many songs, and I love it. I love my job. I love performing as me. But the opportunity to perform in a really different way as not me, in a really different context, you know, not just singing, but dancing, acting, the whole Broadway thing, it was very terrifying. I was not sure I could do it at all. So I had to say yes, because I love terror.
What do you mean you love terror? You want to be challenged. You want to do something you've never done before.
Yes, that's the more literal way to put it. Yeah. I was trying to say too, at this age, to be challenged, to be really way out of my comfort zone, this comfort zone that I've honed and developed and lived within and had a wonderful career within for, I don't know, 30 plus years, to be shoved out of it is a blessing, you know, and be really on the spot again. It's, you know, as we know, it makes you grow. It was hard as heck. Showing up to rehearsals, it was a rude awakening, just as I suspected, but I made it through and now we're doing it. We're doing the show.
What were you bad at when you first started showing up to rehearsals? Did you find you were bad at something?
I mean, I did not anticipate the level of specificity, of exactitude. I have gone way far out of my way for my life up till now to not have a boss. Now I have a team. A battalion of bosses, and they are very specific. You know, you point your finger here on this word and you step on your left foot on the da 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 and you hit this mark and you did, you know, and it's very specific and very demanding. And I mean, I guess I could have imagined that that was so, but it was shocking to me when I showed up.
I want to talk about that a little bit later, but I want to talk a little bit about sort of the idea of you approaching this as a road not traveled. I read this quote from you. You were talking about taking on this show, and you said that playing this part is like getting to rewind to my New York youth and follow the road not taken. What did that New York youth look like, and what was the road you didn't take?
Well, yeah, I lived in New York City between maybe 1989 and 97. And everything looked different then. The city was different. You know, I live very close to Times Square now. Times Square is Disneyland now, for all intents and purposes. Back in the day, it was not. It was not a place anyone would take their children. You know, I was so different. I was penniless. I was practically squatting. I was living on the Lower East Side, surrounded by squats, more abandoned buildings than inhabited, although they were all inhabited, you know. And it was just a different era of New York and a different era of my life, for sure. So it's cool to be back in New York with a legit job, with money to buy food. You know, it's a very different scenario.
So the road not taken is what would have happened had you stayed there, or the road not taken is how things could have worked out if they didn't work out?
I mean, I guess when I was in New York as a, you know, rough and tumble youth, I was just ending my dancing tenure. You know, when I danced all through my youth, and I thought that was maybe my first fantasy job, was to be a dancer in this world. But when I got to New York, I couldn't afford, you know, to continue taking classes or find a new home for my body and my love of movement. So dance fell by the way. Music, writing songs, playing guitar, it's something you can practice all on your own for free, you know. So when I was very young, I mean, I was involved in some theater things, but my path found itself to music through process of elimination, through necessity. So I guess when I talk about the road not taken, it's, yeah, maybe the theater geek in me would have had a chance if I'd have stayed in New York, but I just started following my guitar around.
I live in New York, New York, city that never shuts up. In the daylight, everything is so gory. You can hear snatches of strangers' sorry stories. And I moved there from Buffalo, but that's nothing. Trico plant moved to Mexico. Left my uncle standing out in the cold. Said, here's your last paycheck. I've fun growing old. Take me home.
Did Broadway mean anything to you back then?
Not really. You know, I've never been had a special affinity for musical theater.
You weren't like a theater kid who wanted to end up on Broadway or anything like that?
No, I feel almost bad for saying that because there are so many who do, and yet here I am. But I mean, I guess I'm proof positive that there are many routes. There are many routes you can take to Broadway.
I mean, there are many routes you can take to Broadway also goes for an A.S. Mitchell who created this thing. I mean, you never hear of a story like this. She created this first as a theater project back in 2006. The story I heard is in 2009, and A.S. sends you a cassette of the early version of this show. What did you think when you heard it?
I mean, it was a cassette. It was not a great sounding cassette. It was not the best performance that anyone might have documented, but the songs just shone through. A lot of the material was yet unwritten. It was about half of the show that exists now, but that core body of writing of songs just struck me immediately. So my answer was yes, we should make this into a record. I helped her put the cast together, the original singers that played the original roles on the record. And I put her together with Todd Sickafoos, my longtime collaborator, bass player, and also a composer in his own right. And he produced the record, and went on to arrange and win a Tony for the arrangement of the show that we all know and love now. But yeah, it was 13, 15 year journey.
Yeah.
That it took this show to get to Broadway. And I remain ever astounded at Aeneas's patience and level of vision that for such a young woman that she kept going past many plateaus that I might have said, uncle, okay, did that, you know, release the record. Great. There it is. Did it, moving on, next project, you know, had a stint in the East Village, in Edmonton, in London. You know, there were many different versions of Hadestown that were workshopped. I took part in a bunch of, readings, sort of musical performance versions where they were just exploring and inviting more and different people in and developing it. And I think if it were me, I might have thought the job done at any number of points along that 13-year road, but Aeneas kept going.
What went through your mind then when that persistence led to that like big night where, I mean, Aeneas and I sort of run in the same nerdy folk community circles, and I feel like the world just exploded when Hadestown won all those Tonys, when it like became the big Tony, it became Bye Bye Birdie, you know, it became Grease, you know? I mean, I can only imagine what went through your mind. Were you there at the Tonys when they won that night?
No, I was on tour, and Todd was out there somewhere in the Midwest with me, and he flew off to New York, got his Tony, came back, you know, with dark circles under his eyes and this little statue in his carry-on bag. I was involved in the sort of early days, the inception, and then it, you know, went off and had many lives of its own, the development of Hadestown. But I was aware of it through Todd as it got closer and closer to Broadway. In fact, the last, you know, few weeks, again, I was on tour and Todd was with me in body. But he was really way down in Hadestown. He would take his headphones off and step away from his laptop only long enough to play the shows with me. And then, boom, the headphones are back on. You know, they were in that last minute charrette of revision, daily revisions, and, you know, all these last minute choices. And so it was, yeah, I was aware of the journey as it was escalating to the Walter Kerr and Broadway. And then I was there on quote opening night, which of course, you know, after 13 years, it's hard to say that and weeks of, what do they call it?
Previews,
yeah, you know, yeah, right, yeah, there at the theater, and they're sort of changing things and blah, blah, blah. But opening night was a sight to behold. Yeah. Just the immense victory of seeing that work all the way through.
I hope you felt a bit of, I don't know if it's in your nature, but I hope you felt a bit of pride there, you know?
I felt quite a bit. I mean, you know, not that I can take credit for much except for getting it from zero to one, but, you know, somebody's got to be there in the beginning. And Aeneas calls me the fairy godmother of the show, which factored into this costume that I wear now as I do Persephone. I have this ring of flowers around my, this sort of crown of flowers in my wig. I'm back.
Let's listen to you originating the role in the 2010 record. Take a listen to this.
Brother, what's my name? My name is
Our Lady of the Underground.
Brother, what's my name? Brother, what's my name? My name is
Our Lady of the Upside Down.
Brother, what's my name? I'll tell you my name. Persephone.
Sonny DeFranco is Persephone. The track is called Our Lady of the Underground from the original 2010 Hadestown album. Persephone, the goddess of spring, married to Hades, spends half a year in the underworld, half a year on Earth. Her marriage is on the rocks, as it might be if you're married to Hades. She drinks a little too much. She's tough. She's independent. She's tender. What do you love about her?
I mean, it's a super fun role to play because she brings the party. You know, she comes just charging onto stage at the top of the show, you know, with a flask in her hand. She's Spring incarnate, you know, so she's bidding everybody just loosen up and let go and come alive again. And yeah, she's hilarious. It's fun to do, you know, put the comedy in there. And then, of course, in the second act, things get serious. And that's been really interesting for me, this playing the scenes with Hades, my counterpart, that get quite dramatic. And I can relate, you know, being married in real life myself for 20 years now, to this relationship between Persephone and Hades that is struggling to renew itself and, you know, find itself again. You know, I think it's maybe something a lot of long-time married people can relate to. If you turn your back for a minute, things can go beyond settled to transactional.
Dormant. Yeah.
Coercive, even. Things can spin dark. And, you know, over my 20-year marriage, it's not always been easy, you know, and we've had our struggles. And I feel like I can just deeply relate to the moment that the play finds Persephone and Hades in, which is, are we going to try again? You know, are we going to make it work this year? You know, and they sort of leave off, you know, it's fall, we'll try again next spring, you know? And so there's hope for those two. And those two in the play really, you know, everything is very representative and metaphorical. It's a really deep, the mythology, of course, these are very deep and timeless stories. And the musical brings that into a modern context and makes it very, very prescient. And so this relationship between Hades and Persephone also echoes the relationship between man and nature. You know, Hades very much is representative of, you know, industry and, you know, man's will to dominate, control, exploit nature. Persephone, the wife, represents the natural world and wants to be free, wants to be loved and cherished and honored by her husband, not exploited, used, controlled. So the tension between these two gods is also the tension between humanity and nature, which is so much a part of our modern circumstance.
When you're a performer and you've been on the road for 30, 35 years with a guitar in your hand, you have a lot of control. You can choose if the night's not going. My friend Alan always says to me, do what the night asks of you. If the audience is not really feeling these kind of songs, you might start moving to these kind of songs. You might start talking to the audience. You might not talk to the audience. I can see you pointing at me. You might not talk to the audience.
Yes.
And when you're performing in a musical or a Broadway show, it is, you talked about specific earlier, it's also fixed. You can't make a decision if the audience isn't laughing. You as a performer are so used to audience feedback as your guiding light. You can't really rely on it in something like that. How are you finding that?
You are putting your finger on the pulse of my life right now, my challenge with this job, which is, you know, my mom, bless her heart, when I took the gig, she was very glib about, oh, you're a performer. It'll be great. You can do this. But it is such a different gig. From, like you say, for all the reasons you just illuminated. Yeah, it is fixed. And it's the same songs in the same order. It's the same story. And you're supposed to achieve the same thing every night, whether the audience is giving back or not. Yeah, like you say, I calibrate my shows and try to make them as different as I can from each other. And I'm always improvising and reacting and changing, not just the songs I play, given the vibe and the environment, but the persona that I come with, you know, the version of myself I might bring on stage, depending on who I'm trying to interface with. Not so with this gig. So it's been really a challenge, one that I had to acclimate to for sure. I mean, there was my opening weekend, which was kind of a riot, you know, especially opening night. You know, it was a lot of my people were there, you know, my fans, and the whole opening weekend, the vibe was very intense and exciting. And then there was the Monday day off. Broadway weekend is Monday, and Tuesday, whew, that was a long way down. I showed up on stage Tuesday night. The room was not full of Ani fans. It was full of people who bought the cheap Tuesday tickets and were just sitting there quietly. And I was thrown. I was thrown. And it, you know, I learned a lot that night about, right, it doesn't matter if the audience is dead. I mean, I had this experience where I went charging down front at the top of the show, and it felt like there was a chasm in between every line I sang, a gaping void, and that I was going to fall through and never return, you know. And I felt thrown. I felt like my energy was off. And I really learned a lot. Like, okay, you have to pretend that the chasm is not there. You have to still scale that same mountain, get to that same peak, no matter what's happening in the room. And you have to do it with the same songs and the same persona and the same line, you know. And it's been very eye-opening for me.
You did. I saw some of the video of you. You mentioned the opening night, the all the Ani fans there and friends and family. I did see the video of you there, and you were beaming, man. Like you were very, very happy. How do you remember that feeling?
I mean, beaming with relief that I made it through. I mean, just 24/7 trying to control my doomsaying mind, trying not to envision myself falling, forgetting all of these things that are doom scrolling instead of sleep, you know, for the weeks leading up to the opening night. I just was praying to every goddess and or God that I should make it through unscathed. And the fact that I did made me so happy.
I understand now. The buoyancy was not just appreciation. It was also relief.
Yeah.
It was
survival.
That's a little bit of my conversation with the Grammy Award-winning songwriter, social activist, Broadway performer now, Ani DeFranco. You're going to hear more of our conversation in just a minute. She's going to talk about some of the music she made inspired by the U.S. Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. And really what she talks about is when you've been fighting for something so long and you feel like you're not making progress, how you keep fighting. But first, from the original Hadestown album of 2010, here's a bit of Ani DeFranco, originating the role of Persephone. This is Our Lady of the Underground.
I don't know about you boys, but if you're like me, then hanging around this old manhole is bringing you down. 6 feet under, getting under your skin. Cabin fever is setting in. Yeah, you're stuck crazy. You're stuck in a rut, or you could use a little pick me up. I can give you what it is you crave.
I gotta tell you, all morning I've been worried that I was gonna say Persephone or Eurydice. I'm Tom Power, more with Ani DeFranco on Cue after this.
Hi, I'm Jesse Cruikshank.
Jesse Cruikshank.
I host the number one comedy podcast called Phone a Friend.
Girl. Let's phone a friend.
Not only do I break down the biggest stories in pop culture with guests like Dan Levy and members of NSYNC, I do it with my own personal boy band singing jingles throughout because it's my show.
It's your show, girl.
New episodes of Phone a Friend.
Yeah.
Drop Thursdays wherever you get your podcasts.
So work it, girl. Yeah, work it.
Okay, that's enough.
I'm Tom Power. Welcome back to Q. You're in the middle of my conversation with the legendary and Grammy-winning singer-songwriter, Ani DeFranco. We've been talking about her debut on Broadway in the musical Hadestown. But that's not the only thing that's exciting for Ani right now. She just announced she'll be releasing her 23rd album in a couple of months. It's called, and I love saying this, Unprecedented Shit. One of the songs on the album really stuck out to us. It's called Baby Row, and it's based on a book called The Family Row, which follows the events and people at the center of Roe v. Wade. And what you're going to hear next is, you know, given that a lot of the progress made by Roe v. Wade has been undone by the overturning in the states in 2022, given that Ani's been singing about reproductive rights for her entire career, does she ever feel like, I can't believe I have to keep writing these songs? Take a listen.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not just this subject that we're talking about. It's so many. You know, I have a song about how insane the gun culture and mass violence, you know, that I wrote in 1998. You know, it's unfortunately many of my songs remain relevant way too long. Yes, but I, in this song, Baby Row, I'm trying to broaden the lens that we're looking at this issue with. I'm trying to bring in what I feel is blossoming in my culture, our culture of, you know, 21st century North America, an awareness of spirituality that is, I think, broadening beyond Christian constructs. I'm talking about a sort of an existential awareness of non-duality, of the unified feel of consciousness that we all come from and return to, that these bodies that we're in are very temporary and beside the point in a lot of ways, these stories that we tell each other, these identities that we embody and invent and then exit and re-embody. I am hoping as our awareness in this culture is broadening to include some of these very deep and ancient truths about what life is and what death is, that we can apply that to our understanding of women's civil rights and controversial topics like abortion. You know, in the song I say, I'm basically trying to talk about embodying in a specific body in a specific moment is not necessary for all of consciousness to become itself. It is already happening. And the chorus of the song, you know, the path of least suffering leads the best trail. And I think forcing women to reproduce entails great suffering, a suffering that blooms not just in that individual woman, but throughout society. So, yeah, I'm just trying to bring a wider lens into the abortion debate.
I guess I can't help but wonder, does it fill you with anger, hopelessness? Cynicism? When these songs that you were writing in 1991, you know, this is not yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, to bring the conversation back around to Hadestown, not to be a spoiler alert, but it is a tragedy. So it's the story of Orpheus and Eurydice doesn't turn out as we hope. But the play itself, the place that it leaves you is, oh, look, everything went south again. But we're going to sing it again as though it might turn out this time. Hermes, who is the big, basically the narrator of the show, that is the message that Hadestown leaves you with. it might be a tragedy that we have the song that we're singing again and again and again might be a tragedy, but we sing it again as though it might turn out this time. And we hold out hope that it will. So that's basically the story of my life as well. The end.
That's beautiful, Ani. It's beautiful. Congratulations on the show. I love getting the chance to talk to you. We're such big fans of you here, and we love you so much. Thanks so much, Ani.
Thank you, Tom. It was a pleasure.
I think we might be wrong about all of it. Fact, it's been proven. Keeps coming down to this shitty little interface that we're using. The very edges of our knowing's just the tiny tip that's showing. But we're so waked out, yeah, we're so devout to this waking dream. What's playing on the screen?
Off her upcoming album, Unprecedented Shit, that's Ani DeFranco with Baby Row. That album is out next month. Before that, my conversation with the Grammy Award winner, social activist, and now Broadway performer, Ani DeFranco, who plays the role of Persephone in Hadestown on Broadway in New York through June 30th. The other conversation we put up today is, geez, I wish I had been there for it because I liked Scott Pilgrim a lot. Mary Elizabeth Winstead sat down with Q guest host Talia Schlanger to talk about her new role in the show called A Gentleman in Moscow, where she stars opposite, is that what they say? She stars opposite her real-life husband. All right, go check that out wherever you get your podcast. We'll see you soon. Later on.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.